Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Mark Gubberti, and this is the podcast for entrepreneurs who are looking for the breakthrough for their businesses. One of the best ways to invest your money is by investing it into real estate. It's one of the most lucrative opportunities around, but we need to understand how real estate investing works so we can get higher returns. In this episode, you'll learn how to build your very own real estate empire and the mindset that goes into it. So today's guest is the CEO at CashflowGuys.com, a company which aims to educate their clientele in real estate investing and building long-term wealth. Today's guest's passion for real estate and philanthropy stems from a diverse portfolio of invaluable professional experience, which ranges from being a soldier in the U.S. Army, military police, a Florida-certified police officer and firefighter, a contractor, repair technician, and a boat captain. He is an active volunteer in his community, remaining extremely active with Habitat for Humanity and numerous other charities, including raising awareness for children with cerebral palsy. Today's guest for episode 120 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Tyler Scheff. Tyler, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Tyler, I'm really looking forward to this interview, but before we get into building that real estate empire, I'd love to get some background on you. So Cashflow Guys helps people with real estate. You guys even have the Cashflow Guys podcast for people who prefer audio, but why did you start Cashflow Guys in the first place?
Well, you know, originally it's because when I was in real estate for many years, and then I got out for like 4 or 5 years. And of course, when I got out, and everybody, the entire industry, it seemed like changed around me. Like everybody else got out. And when I came back in, nobody kind of knew who I was. I was looking for ways of raising money and trying to figure out how to do deals. So initially, what I found is you could very easily spend more on real estate education than you can on the real estate. And I thought, you know, I really don't think it should cost $50,000 to invest in a $50,000, you know, to get an education on how to buy a $50,000 house. So I started Cashflow Guys as a way to kind of document my journey so that some other folks could get the opportunity to learn from what turned out to be some of my mistakes and not repeat those. And that's how we started the brand.
And I mean, it's interesting how you do have to spend all this money to get that education, which it's definitely good to get self-educated and learn about real estate, but that is such a big investment that obviously could be put into actual real estate. And I feel like people do that. Like they spend so much on education for real estate because like any type of down payment, like just a single down payment, a single property is like tens of thousands of dollars, sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on the actual property. But for someone who's listening to this, who just wants to get a feel for it, what do you believe is the best way to get started with real estate?
I would say the buy, rent, rehab, and repeat method. Basically, what that means is you buy a property, a small rental property, maybe a duplex or something like that, which is two units, live in one and rent out the other. And you only have to do that. And you can do that with as little as 3.5% down in most cases. And actually, in some cases, you can actually get an even lower down payment. Like if you're a veteran or things like that, you can literally move in with none of your own money. And if you do that with the first property, you buy the property with a very small amount of money down, a couple thousand dollars. You live in it for a year and you build up a little bit of equity, maybe 2 years, depending on where you buy it and the market and all that. And then simply move out and let somebody else move in. And the difference is that that property then will pay you, $400 or $500 a month for the rest of your life. It's that simple. So if you want to go from 500 a month to 1,000 a month, you just simply repeat the process and do it over and over and over again.
I've definitely heard of that tactic before. And I mean, I've heard it called house hacking also, but you do buy the one part for you, another part for someone else, and that other person helps you pay off for both of the properties. And I'd also like to mention that if you really want to take that next level, you can even Airbnb your place as well. So you could let someone in and make money from your place as well. And what are your thoughts on Airbnb in general for real estate? Because I do see some applications for it, but I wanted to hear your thoughts on it.
I do have a couple of short-term rentals, as a matter of fact. And what I found is that it is a lot of work. It can be a lot of work when you start scaling, and it's really, really critical to put systems in place. I will say this, we've got two of them. They are really profitable. I mean, very, very profitable. In some cases they can bring in four times the rent that we would normally get as a long term. However, there are slow seasons, at least here in Florida. There are times of the year, like in the middle of summer, where there's not a whole lot happening. So we do establish some vacancy and things like that during the summertime, but we do so well in the wintertime. Like right now, I am booked solid all the way through into May.
Wow.
Completely booked. And I maybe have three or four openings in the middle. And, you know, as far as like 3 or 4 days, the rest of it, I've got every single day of the calendar booked. Some people are here for 2 days. Some people are here for 2 weeks. And I'm bringing in on the average of between $100 to $150 a night. That's for a two-bedroom apartment, which is crazy if you think about it.
And how do you get these people to basically stay at the place? Is it like Airbnb helps with, like, do they help a lot with it, or do you have to do a lot of promotion on your own? Because I feel like one of the fears also is that you buy a property, do something like Airbnb, but then no one comes. So how do you get people in there?
Well, there's several different what they call marketing channels out there, and Airbnb is the most popular. Probably it's actually, like you had said, it's taken on a name as a name for the actual act of being a short term landlord. So, short term landlords, you've got places like VRBO, which is vacation rental by owner. You've got HomeAway. You've got all these different services, Airbnb, that are kind of like advertising channels, so to speak. Like if you wanted to sell something on eBay, you could also sell something on Craigslist. Same thing in the vacation rental space. You've got several different websites you can advertise on. A lot of these processes and systems are automated, so you can get your word out there. But it is absolutely critical to stay on top of, number one, your pricing, and number two, your advertising, because folks are fickle, and they will choose somebody else over you for a few dollars. So you really got to have your finger on what's going on in the area.
And I mean, being able to see everything that's going on, like if you don't see everything that's going on, even if you're on the top, I mean, your position on the top could definitely fall very quickly. So it's important to do that type of research. But I feel like when it comes to real estate, some people think of it as the get rich quick type of scheme, while you advocate more for a slow and steady wins the race type of investment with real estate. And I'm wondering if you could give us an idea into how that mindset plays out in real estate and what we can learn from that approach.
Well, here's the big difference for me. I used to be a guy that flipped houses. You know, that's how I got into real estate. I decided that I wanted to fix and flip houses, right? So I did just that. Well, what I learned was that activity is amongst the highest taxed activities out there. There's no other activity that generates a higher tax base or cost than flipping houses. So you, although you make money, you lose a ton. So for me, you know, I got into it for the get rich quick type of thing, but I quickly realized that probably the cheapest amount of tax that you could ever pay is based on passive income. In other words, income from rentals is taxed at the lowest rate allowed by law. So for me, if I had to choose between paying a lot of tax or paying a little bit of tax, the answers were pretty simple.
And I mean, you could then take that money and invest into other areas. And one thing that got me thinking is that, like, there are different ways to invest, not just real estate. So when you're at that position right now where like you have properties now, are you like, what are you doing from the transition point from when you buy a property to all the days before your next property? Like, are you investing your money into other areas, or are you 100% just real estate?
I dabble. Well, I'm 100% in real estate, but let me break that down. The two areas that I spend my focus on is in multifamily real estate. Okay, so that's small apartment buildings, small to medium-sized apartment buildings, and non-performing notes. And what that means is when you take a mortgage on a home, at some point, if you stop paying, that becomes what they call a non-performing note. The banks they don't want to hang on to those non-performing assets because it looks bad on their books. So they sell those to investors like me. at a discount. And then I can take those notes and either I can come to you, knock on your door and say, hey, you haven't paid your mortgage. Why not? And then hopefully you've got a some sort of a reason that we can figure a way to either get you start paying again and help you save your house. We can perhaps change the terms of the loan to help you out, get you in a better position. All kinds of strategies that we have at our disposal. I mean, I can tell you probably 20, 30 different exit strategies that we have, but we get to help homeowners. So I like to spend time investing in that because I get a rush out of helping people. I really enjoy helping, knowing that I'm helping people.
And I could definitely see how you enjoy helping people because you've been involved in Habitat for Humanity and also helping raise awareness for children with cerebral palsy. And I do point that out again because it's something that I feel like we should all be thinking about while we are generating our wealth and our income. With there are obviously differences between wealth and income, but as you're generating more income, which becomes wealth, we should be thinking about how we can use that to make the world a better place. So I just wanted to emphasize that because it's definitely something very noble for all of us to do, to be helping others.
I appreciate that.
And just to transition back into the real estate, because I personally have not made any big, I haven't made real estate investments yet. But one of the things that I know based on what I've read in books is that, and just I feel like people notice in general that you have to be good at negotiating to actually get real estate and at a good price so that you're not like getting burned by anything in the contract or something like that. So how do you suggest we become better at negotiating for our property so we get more of what we want or at a lower price?
I get, it's not necessarily always about the price. And that's one of the things that I teach people on my podcast is it's not always about the price. It's also about the terms, especially if you're holding real estate for long term. So in negotiating, I spend time asking questions. I don't make a lot of assumptions. I always ask questions because here's what I found. I'm 47 years old. And the one thing I've learned is I'm terrible at guessing, absolutely terrible. And every time I try to guess what this other party's thinking, I am almost always wrong. And then that leads to me saying the wrong thing or not saying the right thing or forgetting everything. And then I start making mistakes and the deal doesn't come together. So to be an effective negotiator, number one, it comes down to asking a lot of questions because we truly don't know the answers. We may think that we know the answers, but realistically, we don't know the answers. So I ask lots of questions, but here's the clincher. I actually listen and wait for the responses. I will literally sit there and listen for them to respond instead of listening in order to respond. You know, a lot of people, they'll listen to you, blah, 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 blah. They're only listening to be polite. And then the minute you're done talking, they blurt out something that's completely different than what you were talking about. You ever had that happen to you?
Yes, definitely.
And that's exactly what I'm talking about. So what we do is I listen intently so that I have a complete understanding of where they're coming from. And what I found, Mark, is that a lot of people really don't want cash for their house. What they want is what cash will do for them. Let me explain. You got a guy that says, hey, I need $100,000 for my house. Okay, Mr. Seller. Well, how much do you owe on the house? Well, that's none of your business. That's what they say sometimes, right? I prepared for that. I'm ready for that. I understand it's none of my business, Mr. Jones, but when you sell me your house today, you do realize that I'm going to have to pay that mortgage off. Yes, I realize that. Okay, so for me to have that happen, one of the things I need to let the title company know is how much that check should be. So again, I'm going to ask you, how much is the payoff on the house? Oh, well, it's $80,000. Okay, so if it's $80,000, is it reasonable that if I give you $100,000 today, that you're going to have to give $80,000 back to the bank? Yes, that's reasonable. Okay, so we're really talking about the other $20,000. Is that correct? That's really what's up for negotiation because your bank didn't tell you that they would like take less for this house, would they? No, they want all $80,000. Okay, great. So you and I are really talking about $20,000. So let's talk about $20,000. You see how that's a different conversation? Because having a $20,000 conversation and having a $100,000 conversation is a big difference. And the minute you start doing that, now you're seeing some change. Now you're having a whole different situation in your hands.
I mean, it's definitely a big difference when you knock it down like that. I mean, it's much less. I mean, what we think about like the big like selling the house for $100,000. It doesn't mean like the person makes $100,000, as you mentioned before. Sometimes it could be just $20,000, and definitely taking the time to ask those questions and listen to responses. That's something I've definitely had to gradually improve on with the show, because sometimes it's me thinking of the next question, but now I just intentionally go off script sometimes with my questions, so I'm able to better pay attention to the valuable insights from all the guests on the show. So, I mean, it's just really valuable to ask those great questions, but take a big picture approach and realize that you're not having that $100,000 conversation, but really just a $20,000 conversation.
Exactly.
And one of the things that I feel like all of us are doing, and I definitely see this happening in real estate also, is that we all have a definition of what it would be for us to unlock our full potential. Obviously, that's a moving target, because once you reach your goal, you'll just set another one for yourself. But not all of us are able to fully tap into that full potential. So I'm wondering, Tyler, what do you believe holds most people back from tapping into their full potential?
Fear. Number one, it's fear. There are people, and this surprised me when I first figured this out, but I was one of them. And for a while, I actually feared success. Oh my goodness, what if this guy accepts my offer? Or what if I get the job? Or what if they say yes? What if I ask this girl to the dance and she says yes? Then what am I going to do? Think all the way back to high school. I'm going to ask her to the prom. I'm going to ask her because I'm going to feel better because I got it out of my system. But I'm not prepared for her to exactly say yes. That's what you're scared about. You're really not scared about her saying no, because you already pretty much assume that's going to be the case. It's when she says yes and you're like, oh no, I don't have a suit. I get to get my hair cut. I don't know how to dance. She's going to think I'm a dork. And these same things go on in everyday life, even as adults. And once you learn how to get past that struggle, and that really comes down to having an execution plan. Okay, I go in with the mindset of this is going to happen, and I'm going to prepare for it. And I go in with a win mindset instead. Big difference.
And I mean, I've heard that a few times in some of the books I've read and some of the interviews, where people say that there was fearful of becoming successful. And the way you described it, it seems like you go in thinking you're not going to be successful. And like, for instance, getting the person for prom or anything like that, and you get the yes, and you're like, oh, I'm not prepared. So do you feel like people are afraid of being successful because they're not prepared for it? Or are there other things in play that create that fear of becoming successful?
I would say that a lot of it is because they feel they're not prepared, but they really don't have any basis for that thought. In other words, if they say yes, I can't afford this house. Well, how do you know that? Because we haven't even got to the point to where what the payments are. So we don't know. I'm not going to get approved for the loan. Well, have you applied for the loan? Well, no. This program that I took isn't working. Well, did you apply anything that was taught? Did you go out and write offers? Did you do what the instructor said? You know, there's all kinds of ways that we can talk ourselves into failure and out of success. And a lot of it comes down to inaction, simply not taking the action to get things done.
And that inaction, I mean, if we're not taking action, we're not able to prepare for the journey that we're going to have to encounter, whether that's real estate investing or other things. And I feel like with all the actions that we have to take, in some cases, it's easier to take the action than in other cases. But how do we get better at taking action? Because there are some days where let's say you get home from congested traffic, or there's another day where the day just doesn't start off right. So how do you take action when it's not as easy to start?
For me, and everybody's going to be a little different, but for me, I sit down and ask myself, what's going to happen if I don't do it? There's a reason why I have to take this action, which means I'm trying to accomplish something. And the purpose of the action is to accomplish something. So what's it look like if I don't accomplish that? How is that going to impact me? How, if I'm doing something because I need to sell something, for example, let's say I need money to pay my bills. And if I don't go to work today, I could sit home and feel sorry for myself, and I might miss that important meeting that I'm scared about. But if I don't go to work, then what happens? Well, I could lose my job. And if I lose my job, then I can't pay my rent or pay my mortgage. And you start to think about all the things that can go wrong based on you not taking action. At least for me, that motivates me to get my butt off the couch and get to work, because I don't want to miss out on the accomplishments that I set forth to myself. I've got certain goals that I've set for myself and for my family. And I ask myself on a regular basis, Tyler, you know, you can sleep in today, or you can have a conversation about what it looks like if you don't accomplish your goals. What's your wife going to think about you? What are your daughters going to think about you? What are your friends going to think that you haven't accomplished what you set out to accomplish? And sometimes that's just all I need to get a kick in the tail, to get up and get to work.
That is a very powerful why. And I love how you give yourself all these reasons to take action. Like, it's not just about you and accomplishing your goals. It's about how the people close to you are going to think about you. It's about how you're going to think about yourself. It's about being able to support your family. So you're flipping it. It's not like, I have to do this work. It's like, oh, me doing this work allows me to do all these great things. So I really love how you're able to flip that within your mindset.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It helps. I mean, it's this every day is a struggle. Let's be honest. I mean, it is what it is. Going through what we do every day, everything presents challenges. That's just part of life. But the difference is what we do with that challenge. You know, we can sit there and say, this is just overwhelming. It's too much. And I'm going to sit here and be comfortable. And then a year from now, you're going to go, well, I'm still the same place I was last year. Why is that? Well, that's because I was comfortable. And if I remain comfortable, I'm going to have the same conversation with myself next year. And I believe it was Einstein that said, what's the definition of insanity? It's, you know, telling the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And we have to take that action. And for me, I have to use that conversion method. I have to back into it. Like, okay, well, what's the worst that can happen? Oh, I don't like that. So I better focus on making sure I get this done.
And you mentioned a very great point, how each of our days, there are certain challenges, like they do feel like a challenge on some points. Like, you have to consistently do the work that you set out to do. Some are more challenging than others. Some feel very rewarding because you see all of that work pay off. But challenges are definitely part of our journey. And with that in mind, Tyler, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced in your journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge.
I used to think that I would be rejected if I made offers on properties. I used to think that there's no way that a seller would let me make payments for a property, because that would be crazy. I used to think that I would, if I was them, I would definitely want them to go to the bank and just give me a check and be done with it. I also used to think that I was more scared of the situation than the seller was. And I was concerned that they would detect my fear and they would use it against me. And what I realized, I'll be honest with you, Mark, is that the seller is just as scared as I am, if not more scared than I am. And I realized that not every seller wants a check at the closing table. Some sellers have different reasons for selling their properties, different reasons for doing what they do. They've got things going on in life that we know nothing about. And I learned that if I start assuming things, I'm actually becoming irresponsible, because I'm making conclusions. I'm passing judgment on a situation without really truly understanding what the situation is. And once I realized that, everything started changing for me.
That's a really interesting idea to think about the seller's perspective. And we're definitely not going to fully know the story of any given person. I've heard this analogy before, where you could take a spoon to the ocean. Whatever you fill in the spoon is what you see, but the ocean represents all the part of a person that you don't know. So, right. I mean, there's definitely a lot more there, more than what we normally see in any person who we meet. And that's definitely a big challenge from a selling standpoint, thinking that this isn't going to work and making all these assumptions, but then being able to knock that mindset out and just going and starting to sell?
Absolutely. You want to know the answers to questions in life, yet you simply have to ask the questions. All the information you could ever possibly want is literally one question away. That question can be in Google, or it could be a phone call, a text message, a conversation with another person, but there really are no hidden answers.
I really love that idea, and that is one of the reasons why I do love asking a lot of questions in my shows, because it's just like I learn so much from each of these episodes. And in addition to learning a lot from episodes, I also do learn a lot from reading books. And with that in mind, Tyler, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great book recommendations that you believe would set us on the right path and have a big impact on us.
I'm going to say number one, for mindset, finances, everything, I would start with Rich Dad, Poor Dad from Robert Kiyosaki. And I would go the next step into his second book, The Cash Flow Quadrant. And then my all-time favorite would be How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie.
Those are three really awesome book recommendations. How to Win Friends and Influence People, that's one of the classics. I mean, that book's stood the test of time. So the methods in that book still apply to this day. And I do appreciate you sharing all of those great book recommendations. Breakthrough Success listeners, those book recommendations will be over at markaberty.com/E120 along with the show notes. And Tyler, I have asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question that we need to be asking ourselves more often?
Why aren't we where we want to be? What's holding us back? Ask yourselves that question. What's holding us back from where we want to be?
Tyler, I love that great question to continue asking ourselves. I feel like that's a question we should be asking ourselves daily, because forcing yourself to ask that question and forcing yourself to think of an answer will eventually lead you to realize, hey, what's actually holding me back, and then doing something about it. Well, Tyler, I cannot thank you enough for being an amazing guest on the show. Breakthrough Success listeners, if you want to learn more about Tyler, head over to cashflowguys.com to learn how you can start investing in real estate and building your long-term wealth. And also check out the Cash Flow Guys podcast. A lot of great episodes there. Don't forget to leave a great review and listen to some of the episodes as well. Tyler, I can't thank you enough. You shared a lot of amazing insights with us. Thank you for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgaberty.com/retweets.